Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening Post for Politics Iowa Style, where we explore and analyze who has been making news in and around the state capitol, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, back here in Ames and broadcasting from KHOI Studios for the first time in 7 months. Happy to be here, and joined by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, welcome, and it's good to be closer to you than we have been in a while.
Welcome back to Iowa, Dennis.
Thank you. It may be a rough night weather-wise. Everybody take care, but hopefully we won't get blown away tonight, except, of course, for this broadcast, and we have plenty to talk about, so let's get right into it, Laura. The state legislature absolutely sped its way to the end of its session last week. It adjourned its 2022 session early Wednesday morning, more than a month after its target end date, and among the things they did and had to do, they approved an $8.2 billion budget for the state.
Yes, and the Iowa House agreed to most of what the Senate Republicans wanted on those budget bills. They were, as we've discussed in the past, they were about $70 million apart on funding for the various bills, and that was part of the global agreement that allowed the session to come to an end.
On that last day, lawmakers were very busy. Among what they did, among the things, lawmakers voted to eliminate the March 1st deadline for students to open enroll in other school districts. What does this mean?
Well, this was a big surprise. I hadn't heard anybody talking about it, and I think it may have been a little bit of a consolation prize. Republicans, of course, were upset that they weren't going to be able to pass the governor's private school voucher proposal. And so this may have been one last thing that it was perceived as giving, or at least the way it was presented by some of the Republican lawmakers, it was giving parents more control over their kids' education. So they didn't get the scholarship funding for some 10,000 students a year, but they are allowing all parents to pull their kids out and open enroll into another district at any time, and that could be very problematic for some school districts.
Do we have any idea how many parents might actually think about doing this?
We don't. I mean, the reason why this March 1st deadline has existed for a long time is that school districts generally have to set their budgets by April 15th. That's the budget for the fiscal year that begins on July 1st. And so they need to know how many students are going to be enrolled at all of their schools so that they can plan for the budget. So that's why the legislature typically sets the state aid for schools early in the session, and this March 1st deadline is in place. I have known parents who didn't know about the deadline and found out about it and were unhappy later that it was too late to try to open enroll their students. So I haven't seen any estimates from the Iowa Association of School Boards, but I do imagine that it could be a sizable number of parents who think, oh, well, maybe I will choose a different school district. Now, the recipient district doesn't have to accept all the students who want to open enroll, so that's another side of it. But generally speaking, they do, because the state funding follows the student enrollment. So the biggest concern for the Democrats who spoke out against this on the House floor was that this could really mess with a lot of the schools' budgets. And a year or two ago, when the Republican lawmakers passed something that ended the voluntary diversity plans that some districts had, Cindy Winkler, who is the state representative covering part of Davenport, she said that the Davenport School District lost about 150 students the year after that happened, and they had already set their budget planning for a certain number of students, not realizing that this was going to be passed by the legislature at the last minute after that April 15th deadline. So it could be that some of the school districts see a lot of students open and rolling out. It also could happen that it won't be an immediate effect, but it could happen in the middle of the year, and it could be something that I've heard people say that maybe coaches are going to be looking at possibly recruiting some students from other schools now that this is going to be a possibility throughout the year.
Legislature also on that busy last day voted to ban private money from being used to help run elections. And this was a reaction to what had happened in an earlier election.
Yes, so there were some grants that some of the county auditors received to help administer elections. And this was a bill that the House had passed early on. I don't know why. I never was able to understand why the Senate didn't take up this bill. But again, as part of these global negotiations that have happened over the past few weeks behind closed doors, this was something that the Senate agreed to give the House as a part of the last bill. This is the last budget bill is usually called the standings bill. Some people call it the Christmas tree bill because it tends to have all kinds of ornaments that lots of different constituencies want. And this was something that some of the House Republicans really wanted.
And in a last-minute compromise on that last day, the State House and Senate agreed to legislation to regulate pharmacy benefit managers. This is kind of an obscure thing. What does this all mean?
Well, this has been brewing for a few years. It was something that State Representative John Forbes, who is a pharmacist and he's a Democrat from Urbandale, he's been trying to get this to happen. The Pharmacists Association has been pushing for this, and it didn't happen at the end of the 2019 session. The pharmacy benefit managers are like a middleman between customers and pharmacists, and the way the bill was eventually changed, it was quite a bit, a pharmacist, not John Forbes, but a different pharmacist described it to me as watered down to the point that the Pharmacists Association wasn't even in favor of the final bill. So I don't know how much it will really do to address the pharmacist's concern over these benefit managers, but it was something that, for whatever reason, I mean, a lot of Iowa towns still have locally owned pharmacies, and so it's something that a lot of legislators may have in their districts, a locally owned business that wanted something like this to pass.
So bear in mind that all of this took place only after State House Speaker Pat Grassley had announced that lawmakers would not pass Governor Reynolds' signature plan to give 10,000 families public money for private school scholarships. That issue had held everything up for weeks. Once he announced that it wasn't going to pass, the floodgates opened.
Yes, and he announced that publicly last Monday morning. I do think that he had probably informed the Senate about that before he made those remarks to reporters, because from what I heard, the reason why they were working so late Tuesday night was that a lot of legislators had plans to be away starting on Wednesday, and there were concerns that they might not have 26 Republicans in the Senate to pass bills if they came back on Wednesday. So I think that they already knew before they came back last Monday, they already knew that this voucher bill was not going to be part of the final deal. But it wasn't. It didn't become public knowledge until the House Speaker made those comments to reporters.
And we will talk more about that in a few minutes. But right after Grassley's announcement, the legislature quickly voted for a two-year moratorium on new casino licenses. It's part of a bigger gaming bill that's headed to the governor's desk. So this one is going to cap the number of state-issued licenses at the current number of 19.
Well, this one really blindsided people in Cedar Rapids, and I think it's been clear for a long time that the State Racing and Gaming Commission has not been inclined to approve a casino license for Cedar Rapids because they're worried that that would cut into existing revenues in the Riverside and Waterloo area casinos. And yet, people in Cedar Rapids, there's a powerful group of backers, and they have a lot of support in the city council for a $250 million downtown revitalization plan that would include a casino. And apparently, they're forging ahead with this plan. I mean, I remember that after the last time Cedar Rapids' application for a casino was rejected, Todd Dorman, who's a columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, suggested that really it's time for them to now start looking at Plan B and something else to do with this downtown real estate. But the city officials in Cedar Rapids, they were not expecting this to happen. So I guess that they'll maybe try again in a couple of years, assuming the governor signs this. It's not guaranteed that the governor will sign it, but I assume that some of these last-minute surprises were negotiated with her staff as well.
And in a ta-da vote, I say ta-da because you and I have been talking about this for a long time, the legislature also voted to change Iowa's bottle and can redemption program. Ye of little faith, Laura, I've been saying for months, I hope this happens. And you were saying, no, Dennis, it's not going to happen. It happened.
It did. The Senate, this was one that the Senate gave the House. So we, as we talked about before, the House and the Senate passed different versions of the bill. They weren't really that different. They were both very favorable to what the beverage distributors and the retailers want, and not so much what the consumer advocate groups wanted out of the bill. But it does increase the redemption, that the redemption centers will get 3 cents a can or bottle rather than 1 cent, which has been unsustainable for a long time. The biggest thing that will be a change for a lot of Iowans is that grocery stores are going to be able to opt out, and I expect to see a large number of grocery stores say that they're no longer accepting can and bottle returns because the bill doesn't require them to have a redemption center within a certain number of miles of their location. It says they can help arrange for some sort of mobile redemption center, but they don't have to. They can just opt out on other grounds and say that they have food preparation on site. So I think that it could be that a lot of Iowans continue to find it difficult, maybe even more Iowans find it difficult after July 1st, to take those cans and bottles back.
I was in a particular neighborhood store in Ames, though, no more than 3 hours ago, and I was pleased to see that they are still accepting bottles. But as you say, they could opt out.
Yes, I think that they still technically they're required to do it until July 1st when the law would go into effect. But, of course, Fairway stores have been flouting this law for a long time. There's been no effort to fine them or enforce a law that requires them to take the cans and bottles back. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see some of these chains stop the redemptions even before July 1st.
Legislature did a whole lot of things, and we're going to talk in just a few minutes about the governor's wins and losses. But before we get to that, among other things, in this session, lawmakers decided that coronavirus vaccines cannot be required for attendance in schools, colleges, or child care centers.
Yeah, so this was a bill that the House Republicans had passed. There was a group in the House Republican caucus that wanted to go further. They wanted not only to ban the schools, colleges, and child cares, but also to ban employers from requiring proof of COVID-19 vaccines for employees. And that was something, as we discussed in March, there was this high drama on the Iowa House floor where an amendment was introduced, and it went down in a very unusual vote on the House floor. And that was part of that bill, would have included more of a ban on an employer mandate, but they just didn't have the votes to do that. And so they ended up passing a version of what the House had approved earlier, so that as of whenever the governor signs this bill, if you send your child to an Iowa school or childcare, they can't be required to have a COVID-19 vaccine. Now, I'm not aware of any school districts that were going to impose that requirement anyway. There were some private colleges that had that requirement, so that this bill does apply to them as well as the state universities.
And lawmakers decided to end the test that people have to take to get a teaching license.
Yes. So this is, it's interesting. There's a teacher shortage for a lot of reasons, and I think that it's happening. It's not just a function of what's going on in Iowa. Across the country during the pandemic, there have been more teachers resigning. So it seems like steadily Iowa's chipped away at the barriers to becoming a teacher or getting a license, and this was just add one more to the pile on that.
Yeah. I'm thinking that because we do this program, we should become teachers.
Absolutely. We've got to be careful of what we say in civics classes, though.
No question about that one. No question. One of the things they did, and you and I have talked about this, is they gave law enforcement the right to search garbage placed outside private property.
Yes, this was a response to an Iowa Supreme Court ruling from last summer. And this one will definitely be litigated because in a 4-3 decision in 2021, the Iowa Supreme Court said that it was unconstitutional to use evidence pulled from a warrantless garbage search. It's really not that hard for law enforcement to get a warrant in a lot of cases, and so I think the first person who has tried on this kind of evidence, it'll go back. Now, it might take a couple of years to get back to the Iowa Supreme Court, and we'll see what they do. But this was one where the Democratic State Representative Mary Wolf, who is a criminal defense attorney, said, you can't do this. When the Supreme Court bases a ruling on their interpretation of the Iowa Constitution, the legislature can't just pass a law that says you're wrong. They would have to go through the steps of passing a state constitutional amendment the way they're trying to do with the abortion decision from 2018.
And one more quick thing. They approved new protections for mobile home park tenants. We talked about this. Democrats said it wasn't enough, though.
Yes, and I think more to the point that mobile home park residents and homeowners said that it wasn't enough. So there is more notice that's required when the rent is raised, but there's not any kind of limit on the number of rent increases per year. There's not a limit in the percentage rent increase, and there are still a lot of protections that Iowans who rent apartments have that people who rent a plot of land to park their mobile home on, they don't have those protections. And in some ways, some people prefer the term manufactured housing rather than mobile home because mobile is a little bit of a misnomer. A lot of these residences can't effectively be moved.
Right. All right, let's take a deep breath for just a couple of seconds when I say it is 14 and a half after the hour, wherever you are listening to us, and you're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk politics Iowa style and how it's affecting all of us. So, Laura, the governor got some very, very big wins this year in the legislature, and perhaps her biggest win, the 3.9% flat tax.
Yes, that was a big deal. Not only did she get the proposal she wanted, but she got it in time to tout it when she delivered the Republican response to President Biden's State of the Union address. So that was a big deal. In the past, when the legislature has passed tax bills, it tends to come near the very end of the session, but this time they got that out of the way early.
And this is going to change Iowa's tax revenue system soon and perhaps forever.
Yes. So the top income tax brackets are going to be lowered first, and then over the next 4 years, they're going to phase in. So eventually, all income taxpayers in Iowa will be paying that 3.9% rate. But the people in the middle and lower incomes who already are paying not much more than 4%, they aren't going to see a tax cut for another couple of years. There is a corporate tax cut that's included in this bill. And another thing that's a big deal is retirement income. So retired farmers who rent out their land, they don't have to pay any tax on that, and other forms of retirement income are also going to be not subject to the state income tax. Now, there's a real question about whether that's going to keep more retired people in Iowa. We know this has been a long trend of people moving to warmer climates, but that was the idea behind these tax breaks, is that it's going to keep more of the older population from moving out of state.
But people only move to warmer climates during the winter, right?
Well, usually. Some people move permanently.
Yeah. The governor also got to sign into law something she really wanted, the bill banning transgender girls and women from competing in athletics. She really wanted that one.
And I think this, more than any other bill, I would say, is an example of the governor's political influence. I mean, we talked about how she didn't get that school voucher proposal, but this is something where, in the past, when legislators had introduced bills to ban a transgender women and girls from participating in sports, they never got through a subcommittee. They never generated a lot of interest. And then last year, in an April 2021 forum town hall on Fox News, Governor Reynolds said that she wanted to sign that kind of a bill. And all of a sudden this year, it got a lot of momentum, and she was able to sign it into law by early March. And I think that without her advocacy, that bill probably would not have gotten through the House and or the Senate.
She also won in her proposal to cut jobless benefits by 10 weeks in Iowa and require workers to take lower paying jobs or risk losing their benefits.
Yes, and this one was interesting to me because during the 2021 session, the Senate passed a bill that would cut unemployment benefits in different ways. It had introduced a one-week waiting period, and it cut some extra benefits associated with plant closures, but it was actually less severe of a cut than the bill that passed this year. The Iowa House Republicans didn't approve that bill last year. So again, this was an example where the governor made a big push. She mentioned this in her State of the Union, or Condition of the State, rather, speech, where she said that benefits, they were supposed to be a safety net, and they're becoming too much like a hammock. And suddenly that bill had a lot more momentum in the House. And so she didn't get everything in that bill. She did not get the one-week waiting period that she wanted for benefits, but she did get that reduction in the maximum benefits that Iowans can get in any single year. That was cut from 26 weeks to 16 weeks, and that's a pretty significant income hit to a lot of people.
Right. And she also won another one of her plans to require gas stations to sell fuel with 15% ethanol. She really wanted this one, and she dragged some Democrats along with her.
Yes, and she pushed for this one last year. It didn't get through. This was what I called the clash of the lobbying titans, where you had the fuel retailers, they didn't like it. Americans for Prosperity, the Koch-funded group, they didn't like it. Of course, the big ag, the corn growers, they loved it. The Biofuels Association, Renewable Fuels Association, they were pushing really hard, and it got stymied. So this year, the compromise, it had a little bit more money for the smaller gas stations that might not be able to afford to retrofit. It also had an exemption for some of those stations, but mostly the governor did get what she wanted. Now, whether this is going to secure the long-term future of the ethanol industry is a different story, because the big three automakers are moving increasingly toward electric vehicles. But this was something that the governor said when she signed this, that she was extremely proud to sign this into law.
And one of the things that was being touted about this is that E15 may cost 10-15 cents less per gallon of gasoline. And I noticed that tonight, Channel 8 in Des Moines reported that the average price of gas is up to $4.27 a gallon, which is a lot of money here. But let me tell you, I just got out of California, and the average price in some parts of that state is $7 a gallon now.
Wow. And outside of Iowa and a few other Midwestern states, there really aren't many gas stations that even have pumps that can sell E15. So again, this is going to increase demand somewhat, but since most Iowans are already buying 10% ethanol blends, the increase to these 15% blends, it's not going to be a huge jolt to the industry.
Right. Well, the governor won those, but she did not win everything. And perhaps her biggest loss is her effort, as we talked, to give 10,000 families taxpayer-funded scholarships to pay private school or homeschool expenses. That was one she really, really pushed hard on.
She's still working on it, honestly. She's been involved. She's endorsed now a number of candidates in Republican primaries for Iowa House seats, and she's really going to be working hard to get that through next year. She seems fairly confident that she's going to be reelected, and that will certainly be one of her top priorities if she is reelected. But again, she has not given up on that one.
She also failed in her effort to require school districts to post their curriculum and lists of library books online.
This is a tricky one because I still think that the legislature might have been willing to agree to some sort of school transparency legislation, but she said in a radio interview earlier this month that she felt that these private school student-first scholarships, she calls them, and the transparency should be part of the same package. And so I think that maybe she pulled back a little bit on that this curriculum and the library book proposal, wanting to pass those next year.
She also lost in her effort, and this was the second year in a row she lost in this one, to pass anti-racial profiling laws that would affect police departments.
I see this one a little bit differently because last year, I think you can say that the governor did push for anti-racial profiling language as part of this broader Back the Blue bill that she proposed, and the legislature ended up splitting that into different parts, and of course they passed some parts of it that enhanced protest-related penalties and crimes, but they didn't advance the racial profiling. This year, I didn't see Governor Reynolds really make any sort of a push. She didn't mention it separately in her condition of the state address. Her staff didn't seem to be working hard on it. I think that she did, in theory, she did introduce the bill, but I don't think you could say she really made an effort on this. Certainly nothing like the effort she made to get the transgender sports bill or the unemployment benefit cuts or the school-related bill.
And here was a last-minute loss that sort of came out of nowhere. She lost in getting four of her judicial nominating commission picks. So let's talk about that.
I've been working on something about this. I went back and I looked at all of the Iowa Senate votes on judicial nominating commission appointees since 2011 when Governor Branstad came back in. So the State Judicial Nominating Commission has 8 members elected by attorneys from around the state, and now 9, used to be 8, 9 members appointed by the governor. And traditionally, the Senate has approved, has easily confirmed most of the governor's nominees for that commission. Governor Branstad only had one who didn't get through, and there was something unusual going on with him. Governor Reynolds has now nominated several who didn't get through, and one of the issues with these 4 picks who got voted down last week is that Derek Mueller, who's a professor of law at the University of Iowa, the governor had nominated him last year, and Senate Democrats voted him down. And what I've been hearing is that it really didn't go over well with Senate Democrats that the governor renominated him after they specifically voted him down. So they felt that was kind of thumbing the governor's nose at them. And the Democrats in the Senate don't have a lot of power. They're down with a 32-18 Republican majority. But since you need 34 votes to confirm any nominees, the Democrats do still have the power to block these nominees, and they usually only exercise that power a few times a year. So this is unprecedented for 4 of the governor's picks for the State Judicial Nominating Commission to be voted down. But I do think part of the issue was that one of them was a renomination from last year who was already rejected.
All right, and there were other things lawmakers did not approve, and let's go over them quickly. Among them, criminal penalties for teachers or school officials who provide, quote, obscene material, unquote, or, quote, hardcore pornography, unquote, in school libraries or classes.
Yes, and this got through a committee in the Iowa Senate. The Senate President, Jake Chapman, he's the second-ranking Senate Republican. He wanted this one, but it never came to the Senate floor, so I don't know whether that was because there were members of his caucus who didn't want to be voting for it, or whether it was just that they knew it wouldn't get through the House. But this was clear pretty early on. The House Republicans had no interest in doing that.
They also failed to pass restrictions on the use of eminent domain.
Yes, there was a bit of a token effort on that to add that language to a budget bill, but the Senate Republicans made clear that they had no interest And I think that the language that would have put a moratorium until March 1st, 2023, wouldn't have really done much because the process for getting these pipelines approved, they wouldn't have been exercising any eminent domain until well after March 1st, 2023 anyway.
And just to clarify, there are three carbon capture pipelines that are being proposed for Iowa, and there will be a lot of debate on that. We'll undoubtedly be covering that down the road here. They also failed to pass the legislature, medical malpractice and trucker liability, and those two seem to be strange bedfellows.
Yes, this is something that has been, this is the second year in a row that there was a big push by House Republican leaders to get this through their caucus. Remember, they have a 60-40 Republican majority in the Iowa House. So really, they should be able to get through just about any bill that they want. But there was a sizable block not interested in this. That would limit damage awards to people who have suffered due to medical malpractice or limit the ability of people who were victims in truck crashes to sue the trucking company, either for negligence in hiring or supervising the person who drove the truck, or also it would cap their damages at a little more than $1 million in most of those cases as well.
And lawmakers did not pass a bill that would have prohibited businesses from requiring any vaccines or inquiring about vaccine status or mandating masks.
That's right. And this was a problem. I mean, one of the issues with this bill was that there are federal regulations for certain types of enterprises in healthcare, and they didn't want to cause problems where a hospital or a nursing home might have to choose between state and federal law. That was one of the issues with that. But also, I think they found it difficult to hit the sweet spot because there were people in the House Republican caucus especially who really wanted to go very far in limiting what private businesses could do. And then there were some who took the position of we shouldn't be telling private business owners what they can and can't do. So they just weren't able to get language that everybody could get behind.
And lawmakers refused to pass or did not pass a bill that would have made daylight saving time permanent in Iowa.
Well, it got through one chamber, but it just didn't get through the other. So, and this one would only have taken effect if Congress passed a law making daylight saving time permanent. So I haven't heard that there's a lot of momentum behind getting that through Congress. So we'll see. I personally like the extra hour of daylight in the summer, but I know that there is a lot of, particularly in the area of traffic safety, a lot of people say that it's not helpful, that there statistically are more vehicle accidents during those weeks after they spring forward and fall back.
One more note from the state legislature. On the same day that teenage gunman killed 21 people last week at a Texas elementary school, Iowa lawmakers passed a bill letting deer hunters use semi-automatic rifles during a newly created antlerless season in January, so those deer can be cut apart by an AR-15.
I'm researching this, and this was a little bit, this again came out of nowhere for me, because the Senate had approved this bill unanimously. It wasn't considered controversial, and so after the big debate in the House where several of the Democrats raised objections to this bill, I went back and watched the Iowa Senate debate, and the floor manager, State Senator Ken Rosenboom, actually specifically said that ARs would be out under this bill. So I don't know whether he misunderstood what the language would do or whether he was misinformed, there was some confusion because the Senate Democrats definitely didn't think that they were voting for a bill that would allow the use of AR-15s. And I have some questions for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources about whether what prompted this bill. Was there somebody who had already used an AR-15 on their property to mow down a lot of deer? Of course, a lot of property owners, farmers, don't like large deer herds on their property because they can cause a lot of damage to the crops early in the growing season. So I'm still looking into this. This one really came out of the blue. I didn't know it was going to be on the calendar, and then it became very controversial in the House.
We are very nearly out of time, but we need to tell you that the primary election is coming up a week from tomorrow night, and we will be broadcasting live next Monday night at our regular time on Capitol Week, talking about the upcoming primary. And then you and I, Laura, are going to be here on primary night next Tuesday to provide up-to-the-minute election returns. But wait, there's more. On the day after the primary, next Wednesday at noon, we're going to be back with a special live edition of Capitol Week to talk about the primary results from the night before. Laura, you and I are going to be pretty busy next week.
We will be, and everyone needs to remember that polls close an hour earlier than they might be used to. So you'll have next Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. to vote at your regular polling place. All 99 county auditor offices are open weekdays through next Monday for early voting in person as well.
And reminder that you have to get your vote-by-mail ballot in by 8 o'clock on election night.
Yes, that's new. Postmarks do not matter anymore. That ballot has to be in the county auditor's office by 8 p.m. So I would encourage people to get those mailed as soon as possible, and maybe it would be even be better for people to have them hand-delivered or hand-deliver them themselves if possible.
We are out of time. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will Zoom right back here live next Monday in this time slot when we'll preview the Iowa primary election. Please join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we value it. We hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.